Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome on and all the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining me. And just got in here by the hair of my chinny chin chin a little bit here. Technical difficulties and those little rascals, gremlins running around here pulling at wires or something. But we pulled the nose up. We got it handled. No worries. No problems. We're all here locked and ready for you, the listeners, to share your stories here to engage with us a little bit if you'd like, and we're here for you. So let's get you that contact information if you want to talk to me or talk to the featured guest tonight. That is the phone number is 949-270-5953 is the FSH Society Radio Show line. That's the number to use to call in. If you want to chat room in too, I'm going to get that up and going here. Like I said, had a little technical difficulties, but we got it going here, and we'll have you up and running in no time, so you can share some of your, I like when people interact with the show a little bit, kind of see it as a support group, you know, national level, so to speak. So love to have you chime in and tell us a little bit about what you'd like to talk about in that regard. So the other contact we got is fsh@fshsociety.org is the email, the general email, or you can email me at fshradiohost@gmail.com. That goes right to me. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at FSH Society. All that there for you. So I got the chat room up now, and we're all set there. So tonight's featured guest is Jennifer Eggert. She is a PhD, a clinical psychologist, talking a lot about healing and dealing with FSHD, and she has a lot to talk to us about, a lot to share with us. She's also going to plug what she'll be doing at the big Las Vegas event coming up as well. So excited to hear what she has in store for us there on June 9th. It's a mindful practice with Jen Eggert. So we're gonna talk about what she's gonna be doing there, and that's really is her theme. It's mindful. Mindfulness practice and kind of, I guess, you know, not just popping a pill and, oh, hey, I feel better. No, it's a little more than that, right? And to me, I always thought when I hear people saying, you know, it's kind of like it's a form of healing, you know. Well, is it healing or is it helping you deal? You know, healing or dealing? You know, these are some of the things I think we'll talk about today, and what mindfulness is, and how do we do that, and some of the different programs that she works with to help people alleviate stress and anxiety when they have such things in their life, such as FSHD, to deal with. And honestly, this can be used probably in other aspects of your life, not just solely in this way. Because to me, I think a lot of people get a little bit confused when they hear healing like it's a cure. And I don't necessarily correlate the two together. To me, it's not necessarily a cure we're talking about. It's more or less dealing with what you have. Maybe it's a way to keep your life going, to keep your attitude up, to deal with the frustrations, to kind of, you know, keep fighting, and to keep pushing yourself, and to keep trying to stay positive, even when certain things are maybe stumbling and kind of getting in your way physically or mentally. And I've always kind of thought that FSH for me has been more an issue for me and on a mental level. It's sometimes difficult for me to deal with the disease in that aspect, worrying about the what ifs and what will I be like and how will my family be, and even my kids, will they have this, and knowing the percentage that they could, you know, that is a struggle for me as well, and like it is for so many of you. I know I'm not alone in that regard, and that's hence why I enjoy doing this show, and that's why I like working with the FSH Society, because that is the network that I need. You know, that is the outreach that I need, and the show, it helps me. Yeah, it is kind of my support group too. So I welcome you all to join us in the chat room and share maybe some of the things that you're dealing with. Maybe Jen can help tonight for you. Or if we have time, we can have you call in and ask your questions live on air. That number is 949-270-5953. One other thing I wanted to share, because you know I like to bring myself into the show a little bit, you know, so to speak, but also because you know I see things, and then you know my life has changed since this has happened, and it's all, you know, I guess I just want to share a little bit. So to me, there's this one thing I wanted to share, and I was kind of debating if I should or shouldn't, but I feel compelled to, because I feel like it kind of falls in line with what we're talking about today, what we're going to talk about today. I had a Facebook post, and I've you know found it on I'll Push You, which I had those gentlemen on in a past show from the book and the documentary, and I enjoy these two gentlemen very much and inspirational people, and they have some great Facebook pictures that they post with really good inspirational sayings. And so I posted this picture, and on the picture it said, and I quote, "We all die. The goal isn't to live forever. The goal is to create something that will." I felt inspired by that because that's exactly what I feel like I'm trying to do. I'm trying to leave a mark, to help, to be a contributor to a solution, not just be closed off. That's not my style. I understand why people can't do that, can't be outward about certain things. I get it. But for me, I can't. And this is my vessel. This is what I use. This is what I do, right? So to me, that saying that I posted on Facebook, I thought maybe that would inspire others, that maybe when your life feels like a grind, you know, we're trying to create. Maybe you got to try to create something that lasts longer than you. And I thought I might get some likes, a couple little hearts, you know how Facebook goes, you know. But then I got a comment. And the comment said, "Really? ? Must I? ? I can't just live? ? I'm like, okay. Honestly, I was kind of turned off by the comment. I thought it was a little snarky. But then I thought, okay, I'm reading into emotions. I don't like to put emotions in text because that doesn't necessarily mean that was in the way it was put or the way it was written or the emotional, you know, state of mind the person was in. So I don't want to read into it too much. But, you know, I'm allowed to elaborate a little. And it just made me think that the first thing I thought of is no, you can't just live. For me, I can't. And that's actually how I responded back to the comment, to the person that put the comment on. I tried to keep it in a positive light and not be negative about that response, and not really sure why I was at first negative about that response. But I thought, no, for me, I can't. For me, I'm done doing that. I've done that already, and now I want to do something that makes a difference. I don't want to just go to work, punch the clock, and I guess my job means something to somebody out there, and I mean something obviously to my family, but I want to do more. And since I'm not going to be able to do that in my job, I want to do it in volunteer. I want to do it in other things, in other aspects, and reaching out to people. And what this FSH diagnosis for me a little over a year ago showed me is that I'm becoming a better person since the diagnosis than probably I was before, because I feel like I've been more compassionate. And I think that's what I'm sure we'll talk about that word too tonight, right? Compassion and listening. So I just wanted to share that with you. Maybe you got a comment for me back like, "Hey, Tim, lighten up. It's just a Facebook comment." I don't know. You can use the chat room. You can do that if you'd like. Chat at me. Tell me what you think. The little bit of dialogue I've started here. We have a guest in the chat room right now, so welcome. You can keep yourself anonymous in there, by the way. So don't you can be shy. I was about to say don't be shy. You can be anonymous there. So why don't we take our first break? We started a little late, so I apologize. A couple minutes behind there. We'll get you right back up to schedule here because I know we already have Jennifer Eggert on the line. So we're going to take our quick break and make our transition and get ready for our featured guest. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show. You're listening to FSH Society Radio. Hey everyone, this is Tim, host of FSH Society Radio. And get this, in 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training and cognitive behavioral therapy decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a marked impact in slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So I don't want to hear any excuses. You can get out there, get active, start exercising, and let's start fighting this thing. Hi, this is Tim again, and have you been recently diagnosed with FSHD and kind of trying to search for answers? I mean, there's so many questions. Where do you go? Well, go to fshsociety.org. Join the FSH Society. Get educated, because knowledge is power. Get active, connect with local members, volunteer for research, and donate, because without you, we can't fight this. Go to fshsociety.org. Hey, welcome back to the show. FSHSociety.org is where you can follow us there, at FSH Society on Twitter, Facebook. Dial in tonight if you'd like, 949-270-5953. And you're listening to the FSH Society radio show. We're going to have our featured guest on tonight, Jennifer Eggert. She's a PhD, clinical psychologist. And I'm looking forward to talking with her because she's going to talk to us about mindfulness and mindful healing. And what is all that, right? So why don't we, without further ado, we're going to bring her on now. We welcome on Jennifer Eggert. Hello, Jennifer. How are you?
Good. Hi, Tim. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great now. We got everything up and running.
Some technical difficulties.
Oh, yeah. You know, I call them gremlins, Jennifer. They run around down here when I'm not here, and then they cause some havoc, and I got to quickly clean it up before we go on.
But
that's
known to happen.
That's right. Why don't we get right to it? I'm really excited to have you on because I think that this is a subject that interests a lot of people. And the fact also, too, that you're going to be at the Vegas event on June 9th. You have a mindfulness practice event going on there as well. So I want to talk about all these things. But first, I love to talk about with each of our guests, kind of give a little bit of background of yourself and how you got involved with the FSH Society and, you know, your FSH story, so to speak.
Great. Yeah, thank you. I'm really I'm very happy to be talking with you and sort of sharing with everybody. I grew up in a family of people who had FSH. My father, my two aunts. So it was kind of just, you know, our way of life. You know, this was something that my family experienced, and I myself was diagnosed, I guess it was in 2004, after a number of people were saying to me, you look like you're limping, why are you limping? And I was saying, I'm not limping. And yet there was a part of me that knew, you know, what this was, and I had some suspicions that that was what was going on with my body. So I've been living with it for a while. I feel very lucky that my condition isn't particularly bad. I'm able to do a lot of the things that I want to do. There's definitely moments that something is difficult. Walking stairs has definitely gotten more difficult over time. But, I live with it. And I go to work every day, and I have my life, and I live it as best as I can. It's very interesting growing up in a family where you know, when I was younger, my father would, you know, chase me and my brother around and, you know, was running after us and was very active. He's a fisherman. And then, you know, his disease progressed over time and he uses a wheelchair now. But I grew up with these kind of role models in my father as well as in my aunts of, yeah, we all have these things, but, you know, it doesn't stop us. you know, they're all still really active and engaged in their life. It doesn't mean that things aren't hard sometimes for everybody, but it's not something that necessarily stops people from living life in my family. So I feel very lucky that I had that as a role model as I deal with my own illness. And it's interesting that I became a psychologist. And actually, when I was doing my graduate work at Duke University, I was specifically interested in working with people with illness and disability, probably because of what I grew up with. But also, I was interested in working with people with cancer at the time, and I was doing research there. So a big part of my professional career has also been working with people with illness and disability. So when I started, I was diagnosed with FSH, and then over the course of my career, working with people with illness and disability, and then going through my own experience of diagnosis and seeing how it's affected me over time. Yeah, it's just been a really interesting, an interesting journey for sure.
So when did you get interested though in the psychology side of your life? You know, when did you think like, hey, this is something I kind of want to do?
Probably most people who've known me for a long time would say I was like a psychologist when I came out of the womb. You know, in some ways it's a little bit of a way of thinking about things. I was always interested in psychology. Like I remember writing papers in high school on topics related to psychology. And then when I was in college, when I was at Barnard College, a very dear cousin of mine was diagnosed with cancer and passed away. And that experience really affected me, and I started doing volunteer work with a palliative care program at St. Luke's Hospital in New York City, and just sort of being with people as they were going through serious illnesses and visiting them and talking to them and getting to know them and seeing how the medical community interacted with patients. And that was in the 1980s. So I think it's very different right now, in some ways better, in some ways not so great. But back then I was just like, oh my God, you get an illness and all of a sudden you're not a human being anymore. You know, it's like you become this disease and people react to you in that way, you know? So
right,
I got very
right.
interested in that. And yeah, and that's why I decided to go to graduate school, because I really was wishing to make an impact on the medical community, actually really wanting to work with doctors in understanding the sort of emotional and psychological side of what it is to be sick.
Yeah, because I've asked, you know, a lot of people, because I think I've been challenged with it myself, is I ask people that have this, what bothers you or what affects you more about it? You know, is it the physical side or is it the mental side, you know, the emotional side? And for me, my answer is the emotional or mental stress that it puts on me, because I'm more prone to be a worrier or, you know, and it just kind of attacks me that way. And others have said it's gone hand in hand. If it affects them more physically, then it kind of affects emotionally then, right? You know, right after. So the fact, you know, the fact that we've had,
You're getting my dog in the background.
It's a good watchdog.
Oh, anyone who knows him knows that's true.
So the fact,
sorry
that,
about that.
No, that's okay. The fact that we've had, you know, doctors on, we're talking about the science of it, and this is what it does to us physically, and we've had great guests talk about, you know, even certain life hacks that we can do to help ourselves And we've had a little bit, you know, ventured into the psychological side, but not to this extent, which is why I'm glad that you've come on, because it's kind of like, I think this is like a huge, huge piece to it. I also agree with you too, when you're saying it almost like, do you find that it becomes part of a person's identity to have something like this?
Yeah, in listening to the first part of the show and what you were saying actually about that comment that someone had put on your Facebook wall,
yeah.
About like fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I totally understood what that person was saying in a way. And I also understood what you were saying too. And really, like, the illness doesn't mean you are just the illness. Although that is, I think, sometimes what happens in terms of the way that the world works, looks at you. You know, you could see it. You walk down the street. If you've ever, you know, been in the street with someone who's in a wheelchair, people look at the person like, oh, what's that about? You know, like it's, right. And then there's all these assumptions that can come along with that, that people, and for some people, becoming like an activist and making, educating people and making the world a better place for people who have disabilities or illnesses, you know, really something like you were saying, it's clearly that that's like a passion for you, and that's amazing. And the FSH Society is lucky, you know, to have you doing this. For other people, they may not want to save the world. They may want to just figure out how they can live their life in the best way possible, having this thing. And
right.
In many ways, you could also look at that is saving their own world, and it's saving the world of their families and the people who care about them, because they can find some peace with it. So I get it. And it can be pressure. Like, I used to hear this a lot from cancer patients, because I did my research on sort of the positive things that come out of being diagnosed with cancer, and people would talk about, you know, feeling that they had a greater sense of purpose and meaning in life. The things that used to bother them in the past really didn't bother them anymore, because it was like trivial at this point when you're facing something potentially life-threatening. But these women with breast cancer that I would interview would also talk about a little frustration with feeling that they had to be some sort of super cancer patient, that they had to be, you know, the best cancer patient ever. And they had to, you know, raise money and be an advocate. And that there was an anger about that, that wasn't what they felt, that was a lot of pressure being put on them when they were just someone who was going through something that was difficult in their life.
Right.
And yeah. So it was interesting, you know, hearing you talk about that and like that person's response, because I think that that's true. How do we integrate this into our understanding of who we are?
Yeah. And I didn't want to, you know, come across like I thought this person was necessarily wrong, even though my first instinct was, hey, that's kind of a dig I felt, you know, I'm like, well, maybe
sure.
It's not, you know? And I felt like, I guess, yeah, like not everybody's going to respond to things as I do. So, but, you know, for
right.
me, when I, even before they named whatever this is, you know, I've told the story before on air, I looked at my wife and I said, whatever they're going to call this thing, because obviously it's something, you know, I'm all in. I mean, I'm all in to fight it.
Yeah.
I'm all in to advocate. I'm all in to educate. I'm all in, because if I don't, and she looked right at me and finished my sentence and said, you're going to go crazy. I said, yeah, I will go crazy, because I am not going to be able to sit idle and go, oh, that's what this is. Okay, whatever. And it's not necessarily just for me, but for anybody else that has it. Like, so knowing now that it's FSHD, I'm similar to you in the aspect of I can move. I am mobile. I can't lift a lot of stuff really great anymore. And maybe I walk a little slower than I used to. And I get tired maybe a little bit, you know, or a little quicker, but I'm still strong enough. So I'll carry a load for a group of people and help get their voice heard, because maybe I can do that a little easier than they can. And that's kind of where I took it. Like, I'm like, I think I'm going to do this because I can until I can't.
Yeah.
So that was like my driving force.
And it is also exactly this question, like how do you they were each all so unique, and we all have to find a way, you know, what is the role of this going to be in my life? And
right.
it can be this great motivating factor, you know, as it has been with you, to really sort of make a difference and contribute positively. For other people, it could be a motivating factor in other ways. Like, we all have, and that's, I think, very much part of what you were also saying regarding the healing process. You know, the healing isn't about curing, but it's about, I guess, at least in my mind, that it's about maybe a little bit more peace with what is, that there
yeah.
is some acceptance and an understanding of a way of moving through the experience in a way that's healthy for you, in a way that works for you and enables you to live fully in whatever way that means, you know?
Right. I feel like I'm in, should I be laying down during this interview or...
Because
I'm getting some value
hazard.
Here. This is great. I love it. No, I'm totally fine with it because, you know, my brother is a social worker. So every once in a while, and he has a master's in that. So every once in a while, I feel like I'm being, you know, dissected a little. And I'm like, all right, stop doing that. He's like, what? You know, so I get it. You know, I mean, it is part of it. And I also wanted to ask this question for sure, because I think this is on a lot of people's minds, right? We're all hearing this term mindfulness, right? Well, what is that? Like, what do you mean mindfulness? Like I got to think. And even in some of the bio that we have of you being on the show, it says, you know, mindful based stress reduction, ACT, all these other types of acronyms, right? So I guess if you could, you know, dive into that, what is mindfulness, or maybe even specifically, what's the process you use in regards to mindful-based stress reduction?
Yeah, so, you know, mindfulness is a practice. It's mindfulness, as I practice it and as I have been trained, is, you know, a form of meditation, but it's also a way of sort of how it is that we relate to experiences in our life. There is a man named Jon Kabat-Zinn who is largely credited with bringing mindfulness meditation from the East, which the origins are in Buddhist meditation. And he brought it to the Center for Mindfulness at UMass Medical Center because he was doing research on people who had chronic pain. He himself was a PhD researcher, not a psychologist, not a mental health profession or a physician, but he had been a long-term Zen meditator and was doing research on people with pain and started thinking, well, you know, I think this could actually be useful for people. And he started teaching classes to these individuals, teaching mm-hmm. them mindfulness meditation, sitting meditation, walking meditation, body scans. And people were saying that, you know, they were feeling less stressed out, that they were feeling a little more peaceful, that their pain didn't necessarily go away. Maybe it's gotten a little better, but they're a little bit more accepting of the fact that they have to deal with it. So he developed a program called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, which was taking this originally Buddhist Vipassana meditation, translating it into sort of Western medical understanding so that those of us in the West and surgeons who might be referring to him would understand what he was talking about and accept it. And this was in the early 80s that the Center for Mindfulness was really getting off the ground. And they did a lot of research about the program with patient populations, people with depression, people with anxiety, people with autoimmune issues, with chronic pain, and generally people who are just stressed out. And the program had grown and grown, and there's been teachers who have trained all over the world who are teaching this course. And it's really just exploded. And, you know, thousands upon thousands of people have gone through the 8-week course and learned these skills. I've been trained to teach MBSR, Mindfulness Stress Reduction, as well as a program called Mindfulness-Based Cognitive Therapy, which is an outgrowth of MBSR for people with depression and anxiety. And the cognitive behavioral therapy that you mentioned before that can be helpful with FSH is a part of that 8-week program, as well as teaching different forms of mindfulness meditation. And I teach this course in New York City right now. Yeah. So
I'm teaching
MBCT right now, yeah, in New York City. Mindfulness, as it's defined by Jon Kabat-Zinn, is simply paying attention on purpose to the present moment. And then this is the kicker, non-judgmentally. So how do we be aware of what our experience is in this present moment in a way that's kind of open and non-judging, curious, even compassionate, so that we can actually see what's happening with us. And if you wish, at some point during this, we could do a very brief exercise all together, and I'll give you a little taste of what mindfulness is like. I'd be happy to do that.
That'd be
cool. But it's been,
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, right.
Is that something you can do right now?
Absolutely. We could all get a taste of what this is all about. We're going to do something called a breathing space, which comes from mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And we'll just do it briefly. So so I'll invite everybody who's listening to, take a seat wherever you are. And when you do that, you might want to not sit in your ordinary way where you're kind of all slumped like you're watching TV or something, but rather you bring a certain attention to your posture. So your back is straight, your head's balanced, maybe your feet are flat on the ground. You can feel your feet. But you don't have to be tense like you're in a military alert thing, but just that you're bringing a certain presence to how you're sitting. And just begin by turning inside and asking yourself the question of, what is my experience right now? And we take a look at our thoughts. You know, is it active up there? Is it quiet? Is it agitated? And it doesn't matter if we like it or not. We're just really noticing what's happening in our mind. And then we can notice, is there an emotional tone that's present or not? And then we look to the body. What is it that I notice is going on in my body right now? So let's just quietly for 15 seconds sit with this question of, what is my experience right now in my thoughts, feeling, and body? And now we're going to gather up our attention to focus on the breath. So just take a moment to notice where in your body you really feel your breath very clearly. You know, maybe it's in the tip of your nose or the back of your throat or in the rise and fall of your chest or stomach. And we're going to just rest the attention there. Noticing how it feels as you breathe in and as you breathe out. And really feeling the breath as a physical experience. just following the breath as it flows in and out. And it's really normal to get distracted. So if you find yourself distracted, just noticing it, acknowledging it, and gently bringing the attention back to the breath. And we're just going to practice that quietly for about 20 seconds. And then the last step is that we're going to expand our awareness to not only include the breath, but also include the body sitting here. Maybe feeling the weight of your body being supported by your seat, feeling your spine, sensing your hands in your lap. As you breathe into the body and breathe out from the body. Again, noticing when we get distracted, again, totally normal, acknowledging it, and then gently coming back to the sense of the breath and the body. And let's now practice that quietly just for about 30 seconds. And now we're just going to let go of this exercise for now. And if your eyes were closed, you can open your eyes. And you can just notice, what's it like now that my eyes are open and I'm just kind of looking around? And how does my body feel now? And what's the activity of my mind now? And what's the emotional tone that's present now? And just check in again. And that's a small taste of a very brief mindfulness meditation.
Right. That's fantastic. Thank you very much for doing that. You can easily lock
sure.
in. I mean, your voice is fantastic for it, by the way. Very relaxing.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now, how often do you recommend people do that? Is it once a day, as they need it?
Yeah, you know, it's such a great question. So I kind of look at mindfulness meditation as a skill, or being mindful is like a skill. So it's something that you kind of have to practice to learn. It's more like, it's less like an aspirin and more like going to the gym every day, more like
okay.
a vitamin. So
right.
And so a lot of times I think about it like, you know, when you're learning how to do something like, say, for example, driving a car, you know, you don't start in the middle of like New York City midtown traffic at, you know, rush hour to learn. You start in a parking lot where there's not a lot of distraction. There's not a lot going on. So you get a feel of the car. You get a feel of like how this works, and your body starts to get to understand how much pressure to put on things. So it's kind of like that. So my recommendation is usually that if people wish to begin this, and there's a lot of great apps out there. Headspace is a wonderful app that a lot of people, friends of mine, have used to begin meditating. There's also something called Insight Timer that has a lot of audios, but it's, we practice when we're not super stressed out so that something inside our mind and body learns what it needs for the times when we are having a rough time. But we got to practice for a while, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that totally makes sense, because I think if I was stressed out, like if I would have done that right as I was stressed out trying to get technical difficulties handled, I don't think it would have went over well. But if I have time to kind of, where my mind is a little more clear of all that clutter to begin with, then I could see myself probably being a better student of this. Yeah.
Right. And I think a lot of people, when they're just beginning, they try to do it when they're stressed out and they say, oh, this doesn't work. And then they stop.
Right.
It's because they don't have the experience with it yet to also, you know, we might have this idea, like people, I know I started meditating because, you know, like I wanted, you know, to be peaceful all the time and, you know, let me float up to the ceiling. So like my head bounces, yeah, but that's not necessarily what it is, you know? So we have to first have the experience of, well, what actually is this thing? what is the practice of mindfulness meditation? And there's many forms of meditation. This is just one form. And this is what I learn, what I teach, and what I practice. But we have to practice for a while to get a sense of what this thing really is and what it may do to be helpful for us in our lives.
Now, is this something that if people wanted to attend or are attending that Vegas convention, and you have the mindfulness practice on June 6th, you have it like, you know, like it's like almost like a pre-meeting activity. Is this something that people will be a part of if they want to come and join that? Or can you tell us about what you'll be presenting during that?
Absolutely. I got to say, I'm so excited about this. I had a wonderful conversation at a meeting in New York City, actually with Beth Johnson, who's, you know, the community development officer, about, like, you know, me just trying to figure out how it is I can contribute something to the FSH Society. And this is kind of what came out of it. And so I called June Kinoshita, you know, at the FSH Society, the strategic programs officer, and had a great conversation about, you know, really wishing to bring a mindfulness workshop to the conference. So what we figured out and what we planned was sort of like a pre-conference workshop for patients, families, friends of families. And we've set aside 2 hours, and I believe it is going to be, I hope I'm not wrong, but you'll look on the web, on the FSH website, and it's there. It's like 9:30 to 11:30 before the session starts Saturday afternoon. And I'm going to be teaching people a wide range of mindfulness exercises. And we're also going to spend some time talking about, well, what is their experience with this? How does this relate to FSH? And also give us some time to connect with one another one-on-one and as a group, and how it is that we're coping, and what the role of mindfulness might be in helping people live a little bit more easily with the changes that they experience in their body as a result of the disease. I also would like to, if it's okay, put a little push in for some other stuff. There's going to be a number of different sessions at the meeting. June has been amazing at pulling together myself, Kent Drescher, Aura, and Isaac Prilatensky, who were all psychologists, and we've spoken about different topics that patients and families might be interested in. So there's going to probably be, I'm not sure if it's 4 or 5 different sessions that people can participate on, you know, caring for the mind, sort of the psychological aspects of all of this, about transitions in one's body over time, about living well, about being a caretaker for people who are going through the illness, and how families talk about or don't talk about the disease. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity that, you know, we're coming together to try to offer these things at the conference. So it's really exciting, and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, it sounds like a fantastic opportunity to kind of dive into that side of this disease. And I did notice that as you were talking about it, they do have it on the preliminary agenda. Yeah, they have it dated for June 10th, look like around 9 in the morning.
9 in the morning.
That you guys will be on there. Yeah, so absolutely. I would hope that everyone would be able to attend that and get a lot of value, so they'll be able to see you Saturday and Sunday. That's kind of nice.
Really exciting.
Yeah, it's a fantastic event, and I'm glad you guys are all a part of it. I think it's going to be a lot of help offered there. Now, if people want to learn more, though, about you, can they you do have your own website. That's jennifereggert.com, right?
Yeah, and there's like a contact me form on that as well, if people wish to ask me any questions. You know, there's so many different audios. If people go on YouTube and they type in 3-minute breathing space, MBCT, Mindfulness Based Cognitive Therapy, MBCT. I'm sure that there is an audio right on YouTube from some of the founders of MBCT that they could have a little audio that they could practice that brief exercise that we all just did together. So there's a lot of resources, and people are welcome to reach out to me if they would like to be pointed towards other resources.
Now, we do have a chat room up, and we have a couple of questions, if you don't mind fielding these, from a couple of people listening and have kind of chatted in a little bit. This question is, as a professional with a disability, do you feel people view you different?
That's such a great question. My disability at this stage is relatively invisible. So I don't know that the people I work with would necessarily know that. Although in the wintertime when I'm walking around with my cane in New York City in the snow, people notice it more and they ask me about it. I haven't had that experience. And in the moments where it has come up, it's actually usually been a very positive thing, because it's sort of shared in a way. Like it could be someone, oh, you go through stuff too. You're, you know, like everybody. It's this idea, you know, like as human beings, we all are going to go through something in our life, whether it's FSHD or cancer or depression or, you know, end of a relationship, whatever, that, you know, as human beings, like, this is what happens in life. Things happen that are difficult sometimes. And it's like, how is it that we face it? And so I think it's a little humanizing. So I haven't felt any negative repercussions about that. And I hope I don't.
Yeah, I agree. Another question. This is from the same listener. His name is Sean. And Sean asks, how do we fight the depression of defeat? So I'd imagine maybe he's kind of, you know, implying a little bit, not necessarily a general state of defeat, but, you know, my doctor would describe it to me as like stair falls. You can do something for a little while and then it falls and you can't, and maybe or not do it as well, and so on. So when you kind of, maybe I know I'm elaborating here, Sean, so a little bit beyond your question, but maybe that's what it's about. Like, okay, I could do this for so long and now I can't. I feel defeated. And then sometimes depression follows right in after that. How do we stop that cycle? I'm sure that's not an easy, you just do this type of answer, but.
Right. I know. Yeah. First of all, I would say, you know, to Sean, like, I hear you and I'm really sorry about that. And you're absolutely, you know, it's very normal and really human. You know, these aren't things necessarily that easily just like, wouldn't it be great if we all had a bag of like magic pixie dust that made everything okay? And I think it's hard to keep going when you feel like you are struggling and you do a lot of things and it might help a little while and then it doesn't help so much anymore. And then you do something else and it helps a little while and then it might not help anymore. It's hard to keep sort of going forward. You know, I hope that you might have someone that you're working with that can help you through that. That, you know, I'm a psychologist, so obviously I believe strongly in therapy. There was actually recently Kent Dresser moderated a talk on one of the other FSH programs with someone who's doing ACT therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, which is another thing that I'm involved in. I really, really believe in as a way of working with depression and hopelessness and anxiety. It's trying to learn the ways in which we can live in a way that's consistent to what's important to us. And also accept, and this is the hard part, is like, how is it that we can find acceptance in our life for the things that aren't necessarily the way that we had thought they would work out, or wanted them to work out. I think that probably no one with FSHD is like, woohoo, I have FSHD. You know, this is great. You know, I think you're hard-pressed to find anyone who would be excited about that. On the other hand, our whole life is not just FSHD. Mm-hmm. And we are not just FSHD. So if this is something that we have to live with until, you know, Mark Stone finds us our cure in 5 years, which I pray that is true. He's really quite amazing. He came to New York and spoke to us. It was very inspiring. But until that time, then if we really could accept that, okay, I have these limitations, I really can't control that this is happening, but even though that's true, this is important to me, so I'm going to do this. Or I've always really wanted to do this, and maybe I can't do it the way that I imagined I could do it, but let me figure out a way that I can make that happen and then do it. That we don't struggle with the reality of having it as much, but rather accepting the reality that this is what I have to do and figure out a way to do what really matters to me despite it, or
right,
with it, or because of it. And I think, Tim, that's kind of a lot of what you're saying when you talk about your own, you know, approach to it. And I think for those people that are really struggling and having a really hard time getting out of dark or anxious places, by all means, reach out to a psychologist or a counselor or a therapist, or if you're religious, a spiritual leader. If you can find a therapist that does ACT therapy another mindfulness-based therapy, I really believe in that. And get the help. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of actual strength, knowing when we need somebody to help us.
Well, thank you very much, Jennifer, for joining us today. Fantastic information. I feel like we've only scratched the surface. So I hope that those that want to know more, either go on your website, jennifereggert.com, visit you at the Vegas FSH Connections event, June 9th and 10th. You will be there. So thanks again for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Tim.
So that was Jennifer Eggert, PhD, clinical psychologist, mindfulness practices. That's what she is about. That's what she is teaching us out there to help us deal with the stress, deal with the stuff, the crap that gets in the way. Let's just be honest about it, right? They're not going to have always these great days. Sometimes things are not going to go like we'd like. We're going to come up with another struggle. How do we deal with that? This is another way to do that. I've looked into meditation, trying to do more of it even for myself, and I can honestly say that it does work at the practice I've done it, but I have to practice it even more. So why don't we take a break? We come back, we'll go over some news and notes, close up shop. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD, and share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Hey, welcome back to the FSH Society Radio Show. I'm your host, Tim. Thanks for being here tonight. We had a great featured guest, Jennifer Eggert, PhD, clinical psychologist, talking about mindfulness, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, mostly. You know, a lot of meditation, relaxation, get rid of that anxiety, or help get rid of it, manage it. And it was great to have her on. She will be at the Flamingo Las Vegas event, the FSH Society event, where we have the Connections Conference going on. That's Saturday, June 9th. And Jennifer is going to hold this fantastic event ahead of time. They're calling it a mindfulness practice event, 9 a.m. to around 11:30, 1 o'clock, I believe, is kind of tentatively slated right now. So if you wish to attend, RSVP to Robin O'Leary at robin.o'leary@fshsociety.org. Put in the attention line FSHD Connection Mindfulness Workshop in the subject line so that you can RSVP that you'll be attending that part of the event. And about other events, news, notes, we bring in our friend and FSH pioneer here, June Kinoshita. Hello, June.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? Thanks for joining us, giving us some news and notes this month.
Yeah, I'm delighted. By the way, congratulations for that terrific interview with Dr. Eggert. I learned so much.
Fantastic.
It was
really
great.
That was
I can't
great.
Wait to experience what she does, you know, in person. So, yes, news and notes. Lots going on. We have a lot of virtual ways for people in our community to get together, and I really want to stress how great they are and that they're there for you as a way to connect with other people, especially it can be hard to get out if you have mobility issues or if it's just, mm-hmm. you know, bad weather
right.
outside, whatever, or if you live far away from one of these meetings. So there's one coming up this Saturday, April 28th, the Western Washington community. That's been going for a while. They meet by Skype. Saturdays, 10 a.m. to noon, Pacific time. And then the next, the same day, actually, April 28th, there is a in-person meeting in Leesburg, Virginia, near Washington, D.C. It's our Mid-Atlantic Group's potluck barbecue. And Mark Stone, our CEO, will be there. So it's a great nice. Opportunity if you're in that area to
awesome.
Meet him in person. He's really, you know, he's just got such a terrific message for where we're going as a community and as an advocacy group. On April 29th, I will be at our Boston meeting in Charlestown, Massachusetts. We'll have Lou Kunkel, who's a world-famous scientist who discovered the Duchenne muscular dystrophy gene and now works on FSHD, and one of his postdocs talking about how they are using CRISPR to discover genes
wow.
that might help be involved in a cure for FSHD or treatment. So if you're in Boston, we'd love to see you there. And then next Thursday night, so May 3rd, is our next Connecticut Connections meeting. And I mention that because that is, you had them last month as guests on your show, some of the regulars from that group. They are meeting by web. This is another one of our virtual platforms for people to get together. And although it's called Connecticut Connections, they welcome people from wherever you are. You could be from, you know, Montana. You can be from Zanzibar. You're all welcome. It's free. If you have an internet connection in a browser, you can join them, and it's a wonderful group. So that's at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, May 3rd. And I'll also mention on May 5th, the Los Angeles group will be meeting, and they are planning their famous ghostly gala for this fall, and they would love people to join them to brainstorm about their auction, how to make it the most successful gala ever, and they're such an energetic, great group. It's so empowering to just be in a room with them. So if you're in L.A., I would encourage you to go to that. And two more I just mentioned. In the Bay Area on May 6th, Sunday, we have a lot
mm-hmm.
going on, but I just want to make
we
sure
do.
That
yeah.
you know, we put a lot into them. We want to make sure people go to them because they offer a lot. So at Stanford Hospital, Our group there will be meeting. They have a terrific moderator, actually one of these colleagues of Jenna Egert's, who is a clinical psychologist who has a great interest in what she mentioned, this acceptance and commitment therapy. He leads that group, so that is a wonderful group. And Beth Johnston will be there to talk about plans for a walk and roll coming up this fall in the Bay Area. And one more I'll mention on May 9th is our next webinar with Dr. John Bach. He is a nationally renowned expert in respiratory issues. And fortunately, I think the majority of people with FSHD don't really have to grapple with that for much of the time, but it can be there. Your diaphragm muscles can be affected, and mm-hmm. it can be insidious, and it can be managed if you know what to look for, and you have an expert like John Bach to talk about. So I feel every FSHD patient should be educated about the respiratory issues. Even if you might never have to deal with them, it's something you should be aware of so you can stay ahead of any problems that might arise. So that's what we have on our calendar. And then I wanted to mention a number of things that we recently posted on our website because there's a lot of really important and exciting news for our community. So I just want to make sure people are aware of it. So we just posted on the blog that we are rolling out a national signature event. It's this walk and roll that you've probably heard about a few times now. But we're really now rolling it out to scale. We have these pioneers that are going to be having walk and rolls in the fall, in September and early October. But we've launched a peer-to-peer fundraising platform where anyone out there who would like to start a walk and roll, it walks you through how to do that. Or if you want to support one of the walk and rolls that other people are doing, it shows you how to do that, how to build a team. And this is really where the big power in our untapped potential in a community is, which is our friends. You know, people give to people they care about. And, you know, when you have a walk, that is the opportunity. That's how the Alzheimer's Association, that's how MDA, that's how multiple sclerosis, how they have grown, is through their grassroots members reaching out to their friends, their circle, and saying, you know, can you pitch in $10, $25, be on my team, help me raise, you know, my goal of $1,000, whatever it is. It's tremendously powerful. So we're really excited to get to a place where we can have our signature event. And the other, just as last thing I want to mention, is that we have an award we're giving out at the Connect meeting. We'll announce it at the Connect meeting, but it's our 2018 FSH Society Community Award. And we want to recognize individuals or groups out there who have gone above and beyond as advocates at the grassroots level to raise awareness, to be a resource for other people in the community, for, you know, whatever it is. People are movers and shakers. We want to recognize and honor them. So we've called on our community to send in nominations if you feel there's someone who deserves this recognition. So that the deadline to turn in your nomination is, I want to say, May 15th. No, I'm sorry. It's May 1st. It's coming right up. <isn't it>? So May 1st, if you know somebody who should be recognized, please send in your nomination. That's it for me.
Yeah, that's more than a mouthful. There's a lot going on. I'm glad that you came on and you could get all that out. I don't know if I would have been able to do it as good.
Well, I live and breathe it. and it's my passion.
Absolutely.
So,
well, thanks, June, for bringing us that.
Thanks so much, Tim.
Yep. No problem. And we'll see you next episode.
Next time. Okay. Yep. Bye-bye.
That's June Kinoshita giving us those news and notes. You can find out more about what she was talking about, all those great events going on at fshsociety.org. As she said, it is her passion. She's found it. She's following it. I think this is mine, and I'm following it the best I can. I hope you can follow yours, find yours as well, you know, whatever that may be. And maybe in some of this mindful practice will help you there. And That's kind of what I hope for all of you. I also wanted to mention that we have a great show also in store for next month. What we have is Dave Lucas is going to be our featured guest on the next FSH Society radio show. He is the Chicago Meeting Group leader, maybe founder. We'll get his full story of his battle with FSH and also how the meeting group is coming along and how he wants to champion it to become one of the main charters out there. So I'm very excited to have Dave on. I met him personally about several weeks ago when I attended the Chicagoland meeting. It was awesome. And I'm really glad to have him on. So I look forward to that. Special thank you tonight to Jennifer Eggert for joining us. A great featured guest. Learn more about her at jennifereggert.com. Also, she will be at the Vegas event on June 9th and 10th. Also, the other event that I wanted to plug, but June beat me to it, was the Walk and Roll to Cure FSHD. If you want to become a pioneer and have one of those events starting in your area, or you want to join one of those events, please visit fshsociety.org to learn more how to do that. I thank you all for being here, listening, participating in the show. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me on Facebook. Email me if you'd like, fshradiohost@gmail.com. We can totally connect that way and talk about whatever you'd like, whatever on your mind, and share your story with me if you'd like. Look forward to the next episode as we welcome Dave Lucas. Thank you all tonight. Have a good one. You've been listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.